The program to which you're listening is called Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local music. And today, not only to music, but also to theater, straight theater, we have coming up in the later portion of the program, the director and some of the actors from the Rantoul Theater Group's production of Pirates and Petticoats. But in the first portion of the show, our guest will be Eduardo Diaz-Munoz. He's director of University of Illinois Opera Program, and also he's guest conducting the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra in their concert tonight at 7:30. Features music by Ned Roram and David Del Tredici. We'll find out about that coming up shortly here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was music by David Del Tredici. It was his own arrangement of what's originally a vocal piece with orchestra called The Acrostic Song from his orchestral work with soprano called Final Alice. David Del Tredici himself was at the piano in that performance with flutist Carol Wincence here on WILL FM. And here to tell us what The Acrostic Song is really about is my guest for the first half of the program is Eduardo Diaz-Munoz. He's officially the director of opera at the University of Illinois, but tonight he is playing the role of guest conductor of the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra, and he is well-traveled around the world, came to University of Illinois how many years ago now?
This is my fifth season, Kevin.
Fifth season already? No kidding.
Right. I know. Time flies.
You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Eduardo Diaz-Munoz, my guest on this portion of the program. Later on, we'll have some Pirates in Petticoats in a play for a play called Pirates in Petticoats being put on by the Rantoul Theater Group. We'll all find out what that's about in the later portion of the show today. But first, a little bit about Del Tredici, this piece called Final Alice. Now, it's one of, as the title sort of implies, it's one of a number of Alice pieces that he wrote,
right,
inspired by Alice in Wonderland.
Exactly. He wrote, as far as I know, four large pieces for symphony orchestra. And apparently he just fell in love with the theme and with Lewis Carroll's writings. And this one, Final Alice, as you rightly stated, is the fourth one, the last one, of all that series of, actually the first one is called An Alice Symphony. The second one, it's Adventures Underground. The third one is Vantage Alice and Final Alice. So that was in a span of several years. The first one goes back to 1969 and Final Alice was composed in 1976.
So do the other ones also have a voice with them, or are they purely orchestral?
Orchestral, basically. I believe, I don't know them, I just read them, I just made a little research, but I'm not sure if they're... Actually, the symphony doesn't call for an orchestra, but Adventures Underground and the other one, Vantage Alice, I'm not sure whether it calls for a soprano, but Final Alice certainly has a extremely demanding role for the soprano because she's soprano narrator. So she sings, she screams, she cries, she plays the role of a rabbit, then of the white rabbit, then the queen, then the king. And you must have a very versatile soprano to do that, and with a lot of stamina just to make it through the 65-minute piece.
So you have to be a singer and an actor, it sounds like, playing different roles.
Right. Yes, and it just switches from one to the other so fast.
And the singer for this performance with the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra is?
Desiree Hassler.
She's a wonderful singer.
She is.
Now, I'm forgetting, did she do her doctorate here as working on a doctorate or a master's?
No, she did. She did her
She
DMA.
Did her doctorate.
Right.
Because I know I've had the privilege of working with her two or three times with the Prairie Ensemble, and she just sang recently with the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana.
Correct, right.
In their performance of Alexander's Feast.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? No, she sang with the concert choir. She may have sung Alexander's
right.
Feast, too.
Yeah,
no,
with,
she didn't. No, she. But the concert choir with
yeah,
Chet
Ault. Yeah, with Chet Ault, right.
Yes, yes, yes. I've been to so many concerts in the last number of months, and it's funny, this show has been a lot of fun to do because I think I get as inspired as we hope the listeners get listening to folks like you talk about the performances coming up, and then I want to go out and see them. So I have done my best to go out and see as many as I can, see and hear.
Mm. There's so much going on here that it's impossible to attend them all.
Especially this time of year as all of the universities, including the University of Illinois, wrap things up. So the now you're guest conducting the symphony because the university orchestra conductor, Don Schleicher, is on sabbatical this semester.
Right, the entire semester, right. So Dr. Kramer asked me to take over. So I became some sort of an interim director for the entire spring term. So I just took care of programming the entire semester with guest conductor Ian Hobson, because at that time in February, the orchestra, as you and probably your listeners know, it splits in two so that half of the students conform this chamber orchestra and the other half go to the opera production, to the winter production. So, and then we had Flummerfeld as a guest conductor in Brahms' German Requiem. That was in March. And due to the difficulty of this piece, we decided that right after spring break, we would get started with rehearsals. So we've been rehearsing a lot.
Well, I was going to ask, and you've answered the question as to who programmed, what made you decide these particular pieces?
Well, basically, Dr. Kramer and Fred Stolfitz had already previously had some talks with Joe Flummerfeld about sometime in the future, this happened about a year ago, maybe a little more, about doing the German Requiem, because that's one of his most endeared pieces to Dr. Flummerfeld. So we said, okay, the perfect time to do it will be the March slot. And then Ian Hobson conducted the first concert of this term with Bill Kinderman as soloist. He played Beethoven's first piano concerto, and then there was this piece by a student composer that had already been offered by Don Schleicher to be premiered. And in the second half, Ian and I discussed for a while about what piece he would like to do, and we were deciding whether Mozart or Brahms or Mendelssohn's Serenades. And he ended up choosing Brahms' D major Serenade, which proved to be a tour de force as well for those students.
Well, it was a great program. We had Bill Kinderman on the show to talk about Beethoven. We went quite far afield as we discovered a play that he and his wife had inspired that is on Broadway with Jane Fonda, of all people. And then it was great to have Joe Flummerfeld on the show, too, because I'd never met him before, and that was a real treat. And as it is a treat to have you on the show, because I've never had a chance to interview you in my previous show, if I remember.
I don't think so. Maybe just once, but I believe it was a different show.
Yeah, I think so. So it's really a treat to have you. So then, what made you choose Del Tredici and Rorum? I mean, neither of those are household words by any stretch, but then neither have been some of the folks you've brought to the opera lately with some really delightful pieces.
Right. Well, I believe that one has to be loyal to the times that one is living in. And I've made a commitment with the whole community and with the opera, and for that matter, with the university itself, that I would do my best to promote American composers. And so far, I've stuck to my guns, thank God. And But this idea of Del Tredici and Roram actually came from Dr. Kramer. He said, have you ever heard of these two composers? I said, well, I've heard their names, but I really don't know. I mean, I'm sorry to say, but I don't know any of their music. So he handed me both scores, and he said, take a look at these two pieces, and maybe it'll be great to do them now that Don Schleicher will be on sabbatical. So why don't you take a look at them? And the Net Rorum is, it's complicated, but not as much as Del Tredici. So when I started to learn the Del Tredici, I must confess that I was worried. I said, boy, will we be able to put this together? And looking at the calendar and the rehearsal schedule, I figured that probably we would have enough rehearsal time and some sectionals. Probably we could put it together. Another concern was the folk group, because it's very odd. It calls for, actually there are six soloists, in fact. It's the soprano, but then two soprano saxos, then an accordion, a mandolin, and a banjo. On top of the full orchestra, all woodwinds are four, you know, like four flutes and two double piccolo, four oboes, the fourth one doubles English horn, four bassoons, and the fourth one doubles counter bassoon, four clarinets, one doubles piccolo clarinet, the other one bass clarinet, and so forth. Four trombones, not only three, but four. Six horns, four trumpets, nine percussion players, celeste, theremin, I mean, you name it. It's like, it's a huge orchestration. It's just so, I became very attracted to the piece and the sonorities and all the extremes that he goes through throughout the piece, and also his understanding, his amazing understanding of translating into text those two last chapters of Alice in Wonderland. It begins with a trial, and then it goes on towards the end. With all this, how can I put it? I mean, his imagination, it's really, really, shall I say, far-fetched?
I think that, I'm trying to remember if it was the University of Illinois Symphony or the Champaign-Urbana Symphony, which quite a number of years ago did this piece, or the faculty soloist, I believe, was Ollie Watts Davis. And I remember being struck by that piece that, you know, just as you described, there was so much variety in it. I mean, there's much of it that sounds very modern. You know, people would say it's very modern. Mm-hmm. Some of it is very melodic. Much of it is extremely dramatic. Am I remembering?
I think I've heard about 2 weeks ago that it had been done, but I've been told that it was a different piece, that it was not Final Alice.
It could have been one of the other Alice
ones. One of
ones.
The others. So probably, exactly, one of the others that I made reference to at the beginning of the show.
But is that kind of characteristic of this piece that you're playing tonight, with the variety of musical styles in a way that he absorbs?
In a way, yes. I think that the most impressive feature of it all is that the music is built in such a way that it always supports the dramatic text or the intention or even the dramatic line. And at one point, technically speaking, it gets very complex to put together different meters going at the same time and different keys. At one point, you are listening to five different keys simultaneously, and each one of those keys are going in a different rhythmical pattern. That proved to be one of the biggest challenges for the orchestra to put together. But yesterday during the dress rehearsal, it went very well. So it's paying off.
Well, it's a great opportunity for a great sort of piece, it sounds like, to do for an educational institution, because you can involve all those extra players give them an opportunity to play. And as you say, this is America. This is the 21st century, and there's an extraordinary amount of great music that has been written, and Del Tredici's written quite a bit of it, as has Ned Rorum.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about him in a little bit, but I brought along, a short sample here. We have a recording of his violin concerto.
Oh, nice.
And a couple of movements here. We'll hear one or two of them here, but I thought this Romance Without Words, which is the third movement, was particularly beautiful. Gidon Kramer is the soloist with the New York Philharmonic, conducted by one of your mentors, Leonard Bernstein. We're talking with Eduardo Diaz Munoz here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. Speaking of challenges, that piece sounds like that would be a considerable challenge for the violinist. We heard two movements from the violin concerto by American composer Ned Roram, the third and the fifth movements, Romance Without Words and then a Toccata Rondo. Gidon Kremer was soloist. Leonard Bernstein conducted the New York Philharmonic here on FM 90.9. The show is called Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and you can hear some music by Ned Roram tonight on the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra concert. Support for WILL comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign, now serving dine-in lunch and dinner daily from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., featuring a Middle Eastern menu along with hot soup, Turkish coffee, and herbal teas. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. And that concert by the UI Symphony tonight is going to be guest conducted by Eduardo Diaz Munoz, who is usually directing opera at the University of Illinois. But are you still doing, there was an orchestra, South America, I'm forgetting where, that you were.
Oh, the Bogota Philharmonic?
Yeah.
No, I'm not doing it anymore, any longer. I decided not to renew the contract.
That was, you did that for a couple years, I think,
year
or two.
Yeah, it proved to be very exhausting, especially because of the traveling.
Sure.
It took me a long time to get there and then back home. Unfortunately, there are no direct flights from here, so the least worst route that I discovered was through Dallas and Miami. So, you know, it took me anywhere from 15 to 19 hours and three planes just to get there. So after the first year, I was just... You know, have dead.
You'd be exhausted, and then of course the students here who want to work with you, they're deprived for that period of time. But University of Illinois has a lot of people who perform outside here, keeping their careers very active, and that surely brings a lot to the students.
I mean, absolutely.
Your vast experience getting here.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the way we figured it out was that it would be a wave in weeks that I would not be terribly needed here. When I signed the contract with the Bogota Philharmonic, I was very clear in stating that my number one priority was my job here at U of I, so that I could commit for 10 to 12 weeks a year, not more than that. And the majority of those weeks would take place during the summer. So actually, during the school year, I was absent probably 4 weeks, but splattered throughout both semesters. So it was not that bad. I would always choose either at the very beginning of a production, of an opera production, or once we had closed the run. So it really didn't affect at all. Yeah, but the Pacifica Quartet is very much in the same situation.
Mm-hmm. And we have vocal soloists to go out.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, Stefan Milenkovic.
Stefan also. I mean, and this is what I believe makes this university unique, that on its faculty there are performing artists. And I think that is very inspiring for students. At least that's how my education also went by when I was at the National Conservatory in Mexico. Most of my professors were concertizing. That was very inspiring, you know, to attend actually their performances. So you could relate to the real, what was expecting you ahead in terms of the real life. It was not only in the classroom, but also on stage. And to see your professors performing out there was quite a experience that marked a whole generation of young artists.
As I mentioned earlier, you're the director of the opera program here at the university, and my understanding is most of your experience in Mexico and elsewhere is with symphony orchestras. What brought you to opera?
Well, basically, the one that had a lot of saying in this was Daniel Catan, composer Daniel Catan, who was with us in February, last February. I met him about 33 years ago, and I became very fond of his music. And I started to conduct his music. So one good day, he came to me and said, "Hey, Eduardo, I have my second opera finished, and I think that you are the ideal conductor to be responsible for the world premiere. Would you like to take a look at it and I was very scared. And I said, listen, I've never conducted but one opera in my whole life. And actually, it was not an opera. It was an oratorio, Joan of Arc at stake by Honegger, which was very complicated also. But I said, that's the only experience I've had. But he knew a lot about me and about my past activities. And he said, but listen, you have written, composed music for theater. You've played live on several theater plays. So I think that you have an understanding of the human voice and also of the pacing between the pit and what goes in the pit and on stage. So I really want you to do it. So, okay. So I learned the piece. I was terrified, I must say. This was way back in 1990. But the world premiere went very well. And then he said, okay, now let's do a recording, because I believe that this is a piece that I am very proud of, and I would really like to use that recording some sort of a business card to open some doors for me. So I suggested that we recorded some excerpts with Mexico City Philharmonic, because the opera orchestra in Mexico was going through difficult times, tough times, and I knew that we would not be able to have the whole CD in a week's time. So we decided to go with the Mexico City Philharmonic. At the time, I was the associate conductor there, so it was, in a way, easy to talk to the music director and convince him that it was a good project. So we went ahead and did it. And from then on, my love for opera became stronger, wider, deeper. And so when Carl Kramer called me to see if I wanted to apply for this opening, I said, Carl, you know that there is no comparison. In my operatic repertoire, I have 8 operas or 9 operas, and my symphonic repertoire goes beyond 500 works. Why are you inviting me to take over this? And he said, well, because I know that I trust you. So why don't you come here and, you know, perform, conduct, work with the students, and then we'll take it from there. So apparently, later on, I learned that they had been searching for an opera director for quite some years. But they were functioning basically with, in terms of guest conductors, and see who would be of their liking. And I guess they liked what I did, and I was very pleased with the students, with the enormous amount of talent that was going on there. That was November 2003 already. So then I got invited back again for Sweeney Todd, February 2004.
Did you do Sweeney Todd? I didn't remember that was you in the pit.
Yes, with Stephen Fuhl as a stage director.
That's right. That was a wonderful production, and that's a show I'm dying to do someday myself.
Well, you have to do it.
Yeah, I'm keep trying to talk the Champaign-Urbana Theater Company into doing it. It would be quite a challenge for them. But that's a whole nother story. Well, the university is delighted to have you here, and I'm sure that the orchestra is having a great time working with you. They're so fortunate to have Don Schleicher, who has turned that orchestra into really a very professional sounding group, and I've heard some fabulous performances out of them. And then to have the chance to work with you, and the other time I heard you do work with the orchestra was when you put together Bernstein's Mass, which was quite a massive, no pun intended, undertaking. That just came out. Sorry.
That's fine.
And it was fabulous. So I'm sure that tonight is going to be equally so.
Well, we're all very excited. We're all very excited. And don't worry about the pun. Actually, I was making a pun when we were working on Mass, saying that I hope this Mass doesn't become a mess. And it didn't.
It did not. It was really splendid. And I appreciate your coming on the show today.
Thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate your invitation and giving me some time to talk a little bit with you. Thanks.
I'm sure we'll have another opportunity, which we'll look forward to. And best of luck on the concert tonight. It's the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra playing music by Ned Roram. The piece again is called
Lions a Dream.
Lions a Dream. And then David Del Tredici's Final Alice with a variety of soloists, including soprano Desiree Hassler. That is at 7:30 tonight at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. They generally have tickets available at the door. It's very inexpensive, right. And you will find a really professional sound out of the University Orchestra.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much. Here's a little bit, coming up, discussion very shortly about Rantoul Theatre Group's production of a play called Pirates and Petticoats. But first, a little music by Ned Roram that features some of his work with language. This is from a collection of choral pieces called Present Laughter. It's the first of these called O Mistress Mine. Some music by Ned Roram from his collection of choral pieces called Present Laughter. We heard the first and last, O Mistress Mine, and The Laughing Song, sung by the United States Air Force Singing Sergeants from Washington, D.C., conducted by Second Lieutenant Daniel Price, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from St. Joseph Apothecary in St. Joseph, a full-service pharmacy specializing in compounding medications to meet individual patient needs. St. Joseph Apothecary invites you to join them in supporting WILL. And I'm rattling some papers around here to bring up the information that tells me that the Rantoul Theatre Group is going to be playing Pirates and Petticoats this weekend, Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock, and then a matinee Sunday at 2 o'clock, and then the 16th and 17th as well at Grissom Hall Theater on the former Rantoul Air Force Base in Rantoul. And we have a number of members of the Rantoul Theater Group here on the show with us for the next number of minutes, including to do a little reading from it, I believe. And Jessica Holmes is the director, and we have with us also Sam Schieber, Avis Hassler, and Tammy Bellinger. Thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Will this be your first opportunity to play on the radio?
Yes.
Actually, yes.
Yeah. I've been on, but yes, this is the first time for those three.
And this is Jessica Holmes, who we contacted on. I don't even remember if you all sent us a release to let us know about it or where I found the information that you were playing, but I'm glad we connected with you.
Right. We did send a notice, so thank you for having us.
Well, tell us about, first of all, the Rantoul Theatre Group.
It has been going now for 10 years, and I got in probably 2 years in the going. It started in a room that basically had an 8-foot stage, no chairs, and a string of lights. And we've built the stage out. We added theater seating. We've built the light booth over. I think we're on our fourth run. And it's become an awesome stage to work on. And unfortunately, I will have to say that this is our last season in that building. So we'd really like to get the people out to see the next three or four shows, because next year we'll be kind of floating until we find a new home.
What happened?
The building is owned by the Air Force, and actually the museum will still be going for a while, but the building's deteriorating, and it's just, in this economy, too expensive to keep maintaining it and heating it and lighting it. So we've been very fortunate the village has let us have this home for 10 years, and we've done some awesome productions, but we'll find a new home. We have a core group, and we do things with Paxton Theater Group. So between the two of us, I think we'll find a new home fairly soon.
Well, I was actually going to mention that. We had some folks from Paxton Majestic Theater on sometime earlier in the spring, and they were playing at this same theater,
yes,
I believe.
Yes.
Because their home burned down.
Yes. It's really a sad thing. Theaters are struggling, but there's still a need for community theater. It's an awesome experience if you haven't been on stage or helped behind stage or gotten the chance to direct some awesome people, you need to come do that.
So how much direction have you done? What are some other shows that you've been involved
in? Well, I've done two other Pat Cook shows, The Crazy Ladies in the House on the Corner and The Christmas Express. I've directed Harvey and Flowers for Algernon and Faith County, and all those have actually been with my mom. My mom is my inspiration. She's an awesome, talented lady.
And so she was acting in the shows?
No, she was directing with me. She kind of does a lot of the polishing and helping with the auditions and helping with the publicity for it. And I consider myself more the cheerleader, you know, like, let's go, guys, we can do this. she hasn't been around as much on this one, but I know she's planning on coming Thursday, and she'll be there for the show. She supports me 100%, and without her, I wouldn't be where I am.
Well, that's an appropriate thing to say as
yes.
we come up on Mother's Day.
Yes, it is.
And my own mother had her 75th birthday yesterday.
Oh, how neat.
Yeah, and I haven't talked with her yet.
Uh-oh.
It was an interesting weekend, so I'm going to try to do that tonight, or I'll be definitely in the doghouse. But that's a whole nother, that's something else entirely. And so now you're doing this show called Pirates and Petticoats.
I think it's appropriate with the fact, Sam and I have talked about this, the fact that pirates are in the news. But when we think of pirates, we think of Captain Hook, Captain Blackbeard, Johnny Depp, and the Pirates of the Caribbean. And we get this comedy with this naive librarian who wants to be a pirate and wanders into the Den of Thieves. And all the names have something special about them. And some of us, including the director, didn't quite get the humor until a little later on, and it's like, oh, I got it. That means one too many for one too money. And the costuming has been unique. And the set, I have to tell you, this group got together, and within 2 weekends, we have this set that is beyond belief. I'm going to be really sad when it's torn down. It looks like a pirate bar. It has the Jolly Roger flag up. It has the anchor up. It has a treasure chest with skulls. It has netting up. I mean, I can't even begin to explain it. Can you guys?
Well, it's also got a lot of inebriated pirates, which really helps with the ambiance.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then to boot, these folks have gotten together and gone out and done a lot of promotional stuff. Like one night we got them all dressed up, went to Long John Silver's, took a cast picture, and then we wandered out to Walmart and wandered around in pirate costumes. That was unique.
I imagine it was, and a good Long John Silver's a
yes,
certainly an appropriate
place. Yes, we thought that would
place.
Kind of go. And we've done the Street Theater Festival here in Urbana in connection with the Boneyard Festival. And then we also, several of us, about 10 of us, broke off to do an Andy Griffith skit for a mother-daughter banquet, because we're also going to be trying to raise a little money for the Book Mentor Project that's actually sponsored through WILL, where we go in once a month to read to Head Start kids. And then they get to keep a copy of the book. So we said, okay, we made some money on the mother-daughter banquet. They're going to donate it to there. And then we're going to have a beggar and a couple pirates out trying to get some loose change to raise money for some books for the program.
So both some creative marketing for the theater and also some great community involvement.
Well, I think that we know we want to give back too. You know, you guys come to see us. Radio stations, TV stations give us a chance to promote our show. But we want to give back, too. We want to be part of that circle.
You mentioned regarding the story that there is a librarian who wants
yes.
to be a pirate. It's probably important to say that that is a male librarian.
Yes, it's Fisher Cutbait, and that's also unique. We have two young men playing the part. We had a senior in high school, and you know how a senior in high school is extremely busy. So he says, well, I really want to do it, but I can't make a couple of these performances. So another talented young man by the name of Dan Janowski stepped in and said, well, I'll do the shows you can't be there. So each of them are doing three shows. So that's also been an interesting perspective because they both have a little different edge to their character.
So we're talking with Jessica Holmes, who's director of the Rantoul Theater Group's production of Pirates and Petticoats, going up this weekend and playing the following weekend as well at the Grissom Hall Theater in Rantoul. Sam Schieber is with us. What role are you playing?
I'm playing the role of Juan Tumani, which is probably one of my favorite of the pun names in the play. I'm the proprietor of the Den of Thieves and kind of a ne'er-do-well slacker who got tired of being the cabin boy everyone picked on, so he opened a bar.
And how much does this reflect your natural personality?
If you talk to some of my employees, they would say very much so. But you know what? Just sometimes, you know, path of least resistance, best one to go on. So
I can understand that. And then Avis Hassler, who are you in this show?
I am Pearl Diver.
And who is Pearl Diver?
She is a bar wench.
And what's your relationship with Juan? What is it again?
Juan Tumani.
Juan Tumani, yes.
He is my boss.
Aha. So an adversarial relationship or a companionable relationship?
I just pretty much do what I want to do. I flirt with all the guys.
Yeah, I don't seem to garner a lot of respect within the Den of Thieves. I don't know. I think it's my hat, but, you know, it's, you do you make the best what you can with what you got.
So we'll leave that to the listener's imagination, what kind of hat we're talking about. And then Tammy Bellinger, what's your role here?
I play Coral Reef, which is Juan Tumani's girlfriend, co-conspirator at the bar, and I'm actually kind of his boss, even though he doesn't know it.
Well, that's the usual way of things. And what's your relationship with Avis's character?
We're co-workers. We get along well. In between, we play dice games for drinks and have a good time together.
And I understand there are a bunch of lady pirates. Is that right?
Yes. They come in the end of the first act, which is actually one of them is Tammy's daughter. We actually have two sets of mother and daughters on stage, which is unique. And we have two daughters on stage whose mother is a stage manager, and then myself and my mom. So it's kind of neat for Mother's Day. We have all these mother-daughters. That's why we actually do have a Mother's Day special. All seats will be $5.
And that performance is at 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Yes, and you know all the rest of the time we've got coupons flying around, but that's one day you can come and the seat is pretty cheap.
You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, and this is actually kind of the start of our summer season because thus far, since we opened the show on the 2nd of February, we focused exclusively on musical events or arts events like the Boneyard Arts Festival that include musical events. And for the summer, since there's so much theater that goes on, we're going to be expanding to include some straight theater, including Pirates and Petticoats, although this sounds a little bit more like bent theater to me. From the description of
that,
it.
Be fair.
It's enjoyable for kids because the costuming and the fighting, but it's fun for adults because you really have to wait for that humor, and sometimes it's like, oh, I get it.
Well, I actually pulled some information off of a website here that says that this is good especially for middle grades to high school, so I imagine schools must put this on quite often as well, or at least now.
And I think we took it to another level because, I mean, we kind of spruced it up, I think, with the set and the costumes, and then, you know, you get adult actors in there, it makes it even more enjoyable sometimes. But Pat Cook is actually an interesting playwright. He's from Texas, and I usually send him a Christmas card every year because, like I said, this is my third production of his. And he writes back, and he says, my wife is so excited. My one fan wrote me, and I know. But we've sent him pictures, and he is very talented. This is our fourth production of his done at the theater and my third with my mom directing.
Well, before we let any more time pass, we've got two scripts open in front of us here. And so you're going to do a little reading from some portion of the show. Who wants to set this up for us?
I can set this up for us. This is actually not going to be reading our own characters because this kind of gives you this scene will give you a little better snapshot of some of the what to expect from the show. This is Fisher Cutbait being confronted by his girlfriend or fiance. It hasn't quite been clearly established yet. Jamaica, run for it.
Here we go. This is from Pirates and Petticoats, members of the Rantoul Theater Group, who will perform the whole show this weekend and next, and you're hearing them in Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Fisher, there you are.
Oh, Jamaica.
Oh, I was so afraid I would find you in such a vile place.
Oh, nonsense. I'm here of my own volition and have had nothing untoward befall me.
Huh?
I'm unharmed.
I fear for our safety as well, ma'am. After all, any one of these men might away with me at any moment for their pleasure.
Be still, Marigold.
I will, m'lady. Were it not for the hot breath of this motley crew. Oh, I can feel them closing in on me as we speak.
If you are that afraid, go wait by the horse and carriage.
As you wish, m'lady. Unless I am spirited away by some brigand bent on some romantic enterprise and...
Ugh, I don't know why I suited up for this.
Why have you come here, Jamaica?
To find you, Fisher. And here I find you in the foulest part of town, filled with disreputable cutthroats and villains. Sorry, just making a point.
Oh, you shouldn't be here. What will people think?
What people? You mean these vicious, filthy degenerates? Oh, nothing personal.
Now, Jamaica, please don't cause a scene.
Do you think this lot will notice anything? What, with their thieving, lying, and debauchery? Do you mind? This is a private conversation.
I told you what my plan was. Now, please, you must let me live my own life.
And how much longer will that last?
That indeed be a good question. How much longer will the life of young Master Cutbait last? Now, if you want to be finding out, you'll have to join us May 8th as we open the as we open up our production of Pirates and Petticoats.
Aye.
This was Juan Tumani, by the way. Yeah, one of my gigs is I tend to overexplain things and have long, uncomfortable silences.
Yeah.
Kind of like right now.
You tell jokes.
Oh, I do that too.
Very bad jokes.
Well, I was going to ask, and maybe you answered the question, unless this was completely out of the show, whether the pirates in this show really say arg.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Actually, we say arg. Arg is what you say when you drop something on your foot. Arg
is
the accepted means of pirate expression.
I actually typed that into a Google search once. Do pirates really say arg? And or did they really say arg? And the answer was no. That it all somehow came from the film, the Disney film many years ago of Treasure Island.
Yes, the actor that played Long John Silver made the R famous.
Really?
I can't remember his name right off the top of my head, but.
And then ever since then, that's what people decided pirates should say.
He's kind of the king of fictional pirate speak. I wish I could.
I've wondered if the Somalian pirates say R.
I doubt it.
But they don't seem to have the bandanas and the
not the really cool costumes.
Eye patches and cutlasses and all of that stuff.
In fact, our bad pirate, our Captain Hook of the show, he got his outfit from a traveling opera company ship that they overtook. And he even says that. We didn't use real swords. I'm afraid I wouldn't have had a cast left. However, the swords from Dallas and Company have taken a beating.
Well, now, did you have to learn sword fighting for this?
Yes, that was tricky. But, you know, between Sam and Zach and Kevin and Molly, and we did get Melanie up. She fought like a girl for a while, but we got her up to speed. And the sword fights are pretty good, if the swords can survive them.
So an action-packed comedy,
yes,
it sounds like. Pirates and Petticoats being performed by the Rantoul Theater Group. Opening May 8th as... Juan, why can't I remember your name? Juan Tumani.
Juan Tumani.
Announced to us earlier, opens last weekend. No, I'm looking at the wrong play. Sorry. Where are you here? This weekend.
Yes, we open this weekend and run 2 weeks.
There we go. Saturday and Sunday, Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock, Sunday at 2 on Mother's Day, and then May 10th and May 16th and 17th at... Good grief, I can't read this. 8 o'clock May 16th and 17th, and also a matinee on May 18th. For more information, you can go to...
www.rtgonline.org or dial 217-892-1121 and leave a message.
So thanks to Jessica Holmes, director of the production, Sam Schieber, Avis Hassler, and Tammy Bellinger for joining us here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
And that was flutist Carol Winsence with pianist Samuel Sanders performing music by Henry Cowell, a tuneful bit and a blarneying bit here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. It's time for our calendar, which includes for tonight a performance by Matt and Shannon Heaton, playing some traditional Celtic music, playing and singing at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana. That's at 8 o'clock tonight. University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra is at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts tonight at 7:30. UI Jazz Combos performing also at 7:30 tonight at the Krannert Center in Urbana. University of Illinois faculty organist Dana Robinson is performing a recital at the Chapel of St. John the Divine on Wright Street in Champaign. That is at 7:30 tonight. Tomorrow, guest alum, I think she's a soprano from the University of Illinois, performing at the Smith Recital Hall. Courtney Huffman performing tomorrow night at 7:30. And then she's performing again with pianist Casey Robards, a free, smaller recital at the music series at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute on the main Carl Clinic campus on University Avenue in Urbana. That's on Thursday during the noon hour. That one is free, as is Courtney's recital on Wednesday night. This is Live and Local. We invite you to send us your information about your performing group or about your music event or for the summer theater event. You can send the information to willcalendar@illinois.edu. That's W-I-L-L calendar at illinois.edu. Coming up at a minute past one, we have news headlines from NPR. Julie Amacher has more classical music for you at 6 past the hour. Here's our forecast. A mix of clouds and hazy sunshine this afternoon with a high of 73. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, the low 51. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with occasional showers and perhaps a thunderstorm, the high 72. And the outlook for Thursday, partly sunny, the high 75. This is WYLL 90.9 FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana. For Live and Local, I'm Kevin Kelly.